The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation to telecommunications law will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Usually wrong. Every little nut job, an off-right troll, loves to follow Donald when he's on a roll. Tweeting Donald.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Night till dawn he'll
tweet. Jump to repeat.
Go tweeting Donald, cause it's time to pick a Twitter fight.
Tweet,
tweet. He tweets about vaccines, light bulbs too, and how he has the world's highest IQ. He'll criticize reporters, calls them crooks. He especially loves to slam women's looks. Tweetin' Donald.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Night till dawn he'll
tweet. Jump to repeat.
Go tweetin' Donald, we can't wait to find out what you'll write.
Tweet, tweet.
It's not only insulting to a lot of us, he also makes himself look ridiculous. Like his taco bowl for Hispanics, that was fun. Or calling for a boycott of Hamilton. He tweets about fictional voter fraud, or how criticism of him should be outlawed. But all it proves is that he's thin-skinned as hell, and apparently he doesn't know how to spell. Tweetin' Donald.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Night till dawn he'll
tweet. Jump to repeat.
Go tweeting Donald to distract from doing stuff that's not right.
Tweet. Jump to repeat.
Like your conflicts of interest or a team whose expertise is slight.
Tweet. Jump to
repeat. Oh well, go tweeting Donald, because we really need a laugh tonight.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Hold on. It's a double header from Lauren Mayer this week. She had an extra song parody for us, Tweetin' Donald. Welcome to a Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler. We are live here in the afternoon at NicoleSandler.com and on YouTube and on a number of outlets. Of course, by the magic of digital audio delay on the Progressive Voices Network, and of course, always available on podcasts. So, however you listen, I thank you for doing so. So we start with a comedy bit. I think it's important to get started on the right foot. Otherwise, I get angry and, you know, it all goes to shit after that. But today I want to give you a little bit of a double header, because last night the Jim Jeffries Show came back. Now, if you have not seen the Jim Jeffries Show, you need to. If you enjoyed John Oliver on HBO, you'll like Jim Jeffries on Comedy Central, number one, because, he's included in basic cable, so it doesn't cost extra. But number two, he's just really, really good. If you're not familiar with him, he's an Australian. And last night, it was the first show of season three. And I'm telling you, the best one of the talking head shows on television. I put him right up there with John Oliver. Here's a little bit of last night's, monologue, I guess. Monologue.
While a tragedy like this is rare in New Zealand, here in the United States, white supremacists are responsible for the majority of terrorist attacks. Why is this happening? Two reasons. Assholes and the internet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of white supremacist ideas spread via obscure Reddit pages and message boards like 4chan, but most dangerous of all, a little-known site called YouTube.
Hmm. You search for what is the West. The first results are fine, but YouTube starts suggesting more and more right-wing content. And eventually you hit a white power video talking about black people's IQs.
This is how white supremacy gets normalized. YouTube gets more clicks by actively showing people crazy shit. And It's way too easy to find yourself going down a rabbit hole. How easy is it? We gave it a try. First, we looked at our own show on YouTube. Here's a clip from my last episode, season 2, where I became a US citizen. Now, these are all actual videos that YouTube recommends. Here's one called Inside South Africa's White Displacement Camps. Well, I like camping. That sounds fun. What's next? Why 59% of Californians have had it with illegal aliens? The person who posted this is clearly a conspiracy theorist because he mentions the Red Pill Expo. Red pill is a common alt-right phrase borrowed from the movie The Matrix, used to mean they've seen the truth. So we're getting into some weird territory. Next, YouTube recommends this. And remember, these are real videos we were linked to. How did white America allow a Muslim into Congress?
A Muslim woman, can you imagine? Nice. This woman is a Muslim. And there's another nasty black Muslim in there. I don't know if she's black, but...
What?
She black.
Oh, my God.
He must be the loneliest white supremacist in the world. Because he black.
Yeah, he is.
He got 200,000 subscribers.
How does he have 200,000 subscribers?
And this just goes on and on and on.
I have 3,000.
And 2 clicks later, we're in a video called The German Awakening. And we all know what happens when the Germans awaken. It's never good. It only takes a few clicks to get from my show, which isn't entirely racist, to the German Awakening. The scariest thing about the Christchurch tragedy is how it was designed for an internet audience. This guy tweeted about the attack, quoted internet memes, and live-streamed the shooting on Facebook. That video was reposted more than 1 million times, and Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter are still struggling to control it. Here's the thing. If you have the impulse to repost a video of people being murdered, maybe don't. It's not a free speech issue. It's a don't be
Hello?
A f***ing sociopath issue. Think about this. If you have a particular point of view and you have to go on anonymous internet forums to talk about it because you can't actually say it out loud in public, you already know what you believe isn't right. Try and stay off extremist message boards and you'll be happier. Your family might talk to you again. You won't be so angry all the time. And I know this sounds overly simplistic, but instead of getting red-pilled, maybe we should take inspiration from another Keanu Reeves movie and just be excellent to each other.
Excellent. Just be excellent. Yeah. Jim Jefferies. Everybody who's back on, and that's an example of the kind of show he does. He's good. He's cutting edge. He's funny. He makes you think. He's pretty awesome. Otto Deschat, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, in the YouTube chat room says Bob Kincaid plays his stuff. The guy thinks the left is poised to take over with guns and ammo. That's not exactly true, but Jim Jefferies sort of got his footing in America with a bit about how Australia turned around its gun laws after their big massacre back in 1996. He's just really good. The thing that about that bit that gets to me is how many people reposted the video of the massacre. Unbelievable. Obviously there are a lot of sick people in this world. But I got to make it. It takes a real talent to make you laugh when talking about something as tragic and just unbelievable as, you know, these mass shootings are. Anyway, welcome to a Wednesday. There's a lot going on. And yet it feels like we're sort of in a holding pattern. You know, I get up early every morning and I start reading through the news. I read everything. And the first thing that came to my mind this morning as I was reading, it's like there's a lot of stuff here, but there's not much of substance. Congress is on recess. It's their March recess, of course. And so there's not a whole lot, you know, coming out of there. So much of the so-called news is like waiting on the Mueller report or the end of the Mueller probe. But there are a few other things going on, and I'll fill you in on them in the next 20 minutes or so. And then we're going to be joined by our old pal, friend of the show, Gaius Publius, who blogs. He writes in a number of places, but regularly at downwithtyranny.com, the place, you know, Howie Klein's blog. And he's got a couple of posts up this week, basically handicapping the 2020 presidential elections. And he admits it's way too early to be doing this, but there's a lot of good insight on the contenders. So we'll talk with Gaius Publius about all of that. And probably, you know, we may get into some climate change as well. The situation in the Midwest, in Nebraska and Missouri and Kansas and Iowa is horrific. And basically, the corporate media is pretty much ignoring it because it's Kansas and Iowa and Nebraska and Missouri. But they're talking about just unheard of levels of damages from the flooding. The snow is melting. There's record snowfall, and now it's warmed up quickly. And now there's horrific flooding. This is climate change, folks. Get used to it. This is the new normal unless we do something about it. So going on to what's happening today, by the way, spring has sprung. It starts today. Today is the vernal equinox at exactly 5:58 p.m. Eastern time. That's when the sun passes over the Earth's equator and the northern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun. That leads to longer days and the start of spring here in the north and shorter days in autumn in the south. Today also marks the 16th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. I'll just leave that sitting here for now. Today is also the day that at Devin Cow surpassed at Devin Nunes in the number of Twitter followers each account has. Look, we need life's small pleasures. And if that means more people following at Devin Cow, Devin Nunes's cow, than following the actual Devin Nunes, that's a good thing. By the way, did you know that in the last Congress, Devin Nunes co-sponsored the anti-frivolous lawsuits bill? He's suing Twitter for $250 million because people are mean to him on Twitter. They make fun of him. Just saying. Today also happens to be the International Day of Happiness. Are we happy yet? Well, the World Happiness Report for 2019 has just been released. If you're curious to know where we fit in, we're number 19. Hey, if you're watching on YouTube, here's a chart of the top 20. Dr. Jeffrey Sachs was on MSNBC this morning. Apparently, he works with the World Happiness Report, and he wrote the report. So what's the happiest place in the world? I know you think it's Disneyland, but it isn't. Oops, it would help if I turned this up.
Finland.
Ah. Finland.
Second year in a row, followed by Denmark, Norway, and Iceland. So the Nordic countries.
And look at the five.
Sweden comes in seventh. So it is the Northern European countries. They're doing good things. We fall again. Another year, another decline in the United States. There is unhappiness.
Switzerland, Sweden, Northern Europe.
Yeah.
What do they got that we don't? Come on, Jeff.
Oh, I know what they have.
You know what they have.
I know what they have.
Paternity leave,
You got it. They take care of each other.
That's right.
Everybody has health care. Mm-hmm. Everybody has vacation time. Everybody has...
Everyone's pretty and looks happy.
Well, they are happy, and they have lots of vacation time, and they have a good work-life balance. So it's good. And we should learn something from that, because we keep going down in the rankings. We had another decline. You can see it's been down, down, down. Mm-hmm. And this is not good for us.
So, Dr. Sachs, do you agree, though? I mean, these are great countries, but they're small countries. So it would be difficult to scale what they're doing to a country of 330 million people.
Well, there are 18 countries ahead of us right now.
I'm sorry, 18.
A lot of them are bigger countries.
Yeah.
And they're basically taking the anxiety out of life. The countries that make sure everyone has the decencies of life, that they can afford education, they can afford health care, they have vacation time. That's what the 18 countries ahead of the United States are accomplishing.
And what I write about in this year's report, which is online, worldhappiness.report,
worldhappiness.report,
is that the United States is also suffering from an explosion of anxiety problems. And we have epidemics. We know we have the opioid epidemic, extraordinarily serious. We have suicide rates going up. We have depressive disorders going up. It's happiness can also be a heavy subject when you don't have it. And that's what's happening in this country.
So, yes, it is. That's what's happening in this country. For those of you not on YouTube, so you didn't see the chart that I put up on the screen, Finland is number one, the happiest place on earth, followed closely by Denmark at number two, then Norway, then Iceland, then the Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden. Those are the top seven. What do they all have in common, you ask? They're all democratic socialist countries. Hey, sounds interesting, huh? Yeah, following Sweden, number eight is New Zealand, number nine, Canada. Austria comes in at 10, Australia 11, Costa Rica number 12, followed by Israel, Luxembourg, the UK, Ireland, Germany, Belgium, and then coming in at number 19, USA, USA. Yeah, we're number 19. Aren't we lucky? All right. So if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, find a socialist country to move to, just saying, in Northern Europe. What else is going on? Special counsel Robert Mueller's office yesterday asked a federal judge for a deadline extension in response to a request to unseal court documents in Paul Manafort's case. They said due to the press of other work, that was the reason they needed the delay. In other words, they're really busy this week. We're not exactly sure why, but, you know, the media is freaking out like, oh, the Mueller report's wrapping up. The Mueller report's wrapping up. Here's CNN's take on what's going on.
Hundreds of pages of newly unsealed warrants revealing today that the special counsel's team was allowed to pore over years of Michael Cohen's emails and online data.
The next president of the United States.
From his time working for Donald Trump. Robert Mueller targeted Cohen, the president's former lawyer and fixer, soon after his appointment as special counsel in May 2017.
Good morning, Mr. Cohen.
And long before the FBI raided Cohen's home, office, and hotel room. Investigators dug into Cohen's Gmail account as far back as 2015 as they searched for evidence of illegal foreign lobbying, money laundering, and other crimes. By February 2018, Mueller handed certain aspects of its investigation into Cohen over to prosecutors in the Southern District of New York. Those prosecutors then sought additional phone and electronic data from Cohen. According to the warrant, they were investigating a criminal violation of the campaign finance laws by Michael Cohen, a lawyer who holds himself out as the personal attorney for President Donald J. Trump. As detailed, there is probable cause to believe that, redacted. The FBI raided Cohen's properties in April 2018.
I'm not worried.
Cohen later pleaded guilty in a Manhattan courthouse to making an illegal campaign contribution and other crimes. In the new batch of documents, details of the campaign finance scheme, stretching almost 20 pages, are completely redacted, a signal that the investigation into hush money payments to two women who alleged affairs with Donald Trump remains ongoing. The documents highlight the extraordinary lengths investigators went to uncover Cohen's illegal activity. On two separate occasions, a judge approved Mueller's request to track the numbers of Cohen's incoming and outgoing calls. They also tracked the location of his cell phones, seeking a warrant for prospective and historical cell phone location information, and used an electronic technique, commonly known as triggerfish, to determine the location. Investigators also uncovered details about Cohen's consulting work, including seven payments from a company linked to a Russian oligarch, totaling over $500,000 from January to August 2017, the first few months of the Trump administration.
A federal jury this week found Monsanto's Roundup, the most widely used chemical weed killer in the world, was a substantial factor in causing cancer in a 70-year-old man. Because we don't get to hear it often enough, here's the judge ruling in favor of the plaintiff.
Was Monsanto's failure to warn a substantial factor in causing harm to Mr. Johnson? Answer, yes. Claim of damages. What are Mr. Johnson's damages? Past economic loss, $819,882.32. Future economic loss, $1,433,327.
Okay.
Past non-economic loss, $4 million.
Hmm. Okay.
Future non-economic loss, $33 million.
Ooh, okay.
With regard to punitive damages, did you find by clear and convincing evidence that Monsanto acted with malice or oppression in the conduct upon which you base your finding of liability in favor of Mr. Johnson? Answer, yes.
Yes.
Was the conduct constituting malice or oppression committed, ratified, or authorized by one or more officers, directors, or managing agents of Monsanto acting on behalf of Monsanto? Answer, yes.
Yes.
What amount of punitive damages,
good question,
if any, do you award to Mr. Johnson? Answer, $250 million.
Whoa.
Signed by the presiding juror, dated August 10th, 2018.
$250 million. Monsanto, evil company. Just saying. Time magazine is reporting that Donald Trump has taken increased control of negotiations over North Korea's nuclear weapons program, sidelining his own top negotiator and dismissing the warnings of top intelligence and foreign policy advisors in the wake of last month's failed summit in Vietnam. He keeps doing this shit. Here's from Time magazine, quote, in recent days, Trump shut down an effort by Stephen Biegun, the administration's lead negotiator with Pyongyang, to reestablish a back channel through the North's United Nations mission in New York. At the same time, Time reports, Trump continues to dismiss the conclusions of the CIA, State and Defense Departments, and other agencies that North Korea will not abandon its nuclear weapons program, continuing to insist that he and Kim can negotiate a deal. The man is demented. Just saying. He's demented. He needs to be put out of our misery. I said our misery. I'm not saying anyone needs to take him out. They just need to send him home or to a, you know, Bellevue or something. The Supreme Court yesterday fucked up. Sorry. The Supreme Court delivered a brutal blow to immigrants' rights yesterday, ruling, I can't even believe I'm reading this, ruling that the Trump administration may detain unauthorized immigrants indefinitely once they've been taken into criminal custody. It was a 5-4 decision. It permits the government to arrest and imprison undocumented individuals who were released from custody years, even decades ago. Slate is reporting that even immigrants convicted in the distant past of a minor crime like possession of a stolen bus transfer may now be apprehended and detained without bond. The decision hands ICE, even more power to terrorize immigrant communities, suspending due process for certain unauthorized immigrants snatched up by the agencies. By the agency, yesterday's ruling revolves around a 1996 law designed to crack down on unauthorized immigration. One section of the statute compels the Department of Homeland Security to detain certain non-citizens without a bond hearing as the government awaits permission to deport them. Oh, amazing. Here in Florida, where the crazy is pretty strong, Floridians voted in November by a nearly 2-to-1 margin to allow former felons to vote, as most other states in the union do. Well, yesterday, the Florida House of Representatives Criminal Justice Subcommittee voted along party lines for what appears to be a poll tax. By the way, poll taxes are unconstitutional. According to the bill, felons would first have to pay any outstanding fines and fees before regaining the right to vote, creating an insurmountable obstacle for thousands of people the amendment was meant to help. It was Amendment 4, and the wording requires the automatic restoration of voting rights to felons, quote, who have completed all terms of their sentence, including parole or probation. And by the way, it excludes those convicted of murder or a felony sexual offense. Backers of the House bill say that fines and fees are part of their terms of service, which must be completed for the restoration of voting rights to take place. Again, I'll state it in plain English. It's a poll tax. Donald Trump yesterday hosted Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro at the White House. Now, for those unfamiliar with the man who's been dubbed Trump of the tropics, the New York Times describes him as, quote, an echo of the American president, a brash nationalist whose populist appeal comes partly from his use of Twitter and his history of making crude statements about women, gay people, and indigenous groups. At their joint press conference, Trump said he was proud that Bolsonaro adopted the use of his fake news smear against the media. And just to be clear, Bolsonaro has praised torture, called refugees, quote, the scum of the world, compared same-sex adoption to pedophilia, expressed admiration for Brazil's military dictatorship, called for extrajudicial killings, spoke about an American lawmaker and said he wouldn't rape her because she was too ugly. I'm serious. I could go on and on. That's Trump's new BFF. Yeah, two fascist sociopaths. And finally, you think there's a different criminal justice system for the rich and connected? You're right.
After a public announcement charging Robert Kraft and 24 others with soliciting prostitution, word today, those charges could be dropped. The owner of the New England Patriots and the others now may never have to go to court if they accept a plea deal. In this letter prosecutors sent to each of the accused men, they would have to admit the evidence, including the videos taken, would have been enough to convict them. According to the deal, by agreeing to that, the accused can avoid misdemeanor convictions. But the accused won't escape punishment. The deal requires a course about prostitution dangers, sexually transmitted disease screening and treatment, 100 hours of community service, and a $5,000 fine. If Robert Kraft were to accept the deal, these requirements could double because he's accused of soliciting prostitution twice on different days. Will Kraft accept the deal? His attorney did not respond to NBC News, though he has pleaded not guilty to the charges. Richard Kibbe represents some of the other men also charged in this prostitution investigation.
There's never been a reported case like this. And as a result, we think this offer is premature.
One question for Robert Kraft: would acknowledging there is evidence that could have led to his conviction impact his ownership of the Patriots? The NFL is not commenting tonight, but according to the league's conduct policy, owners, like players, are held to a higher standard.
Now Robert Kraft has 9 days to either accept or reject this plea deal. If he accepts the plea deal, sources tell NBC News, he himself will still have to show up in court.
And breaking news, oh my God, Robert Kraft has said he's not going to accept the plea deal. Good. Go to jail, you fucking... You know, I'm sorry. With all the money this guy has, he could afford the most high-priced call girl, but he goes to a pulling tug place? Is that what they call them? I don't even know. Oy, God. Again, yes, there's a different criminal justice system for the rich and connected. Just saying. All right. It's been a while since Gaius Publius has been here, but he'll be here today. He's got a few pieces up at downwithtyranny.com from a couple of days ago. He wrote Monday, a way too early. I pulled up the second one twice. A way too early look at Alan Lichtman's 13 keys to the White House. And the other one is also is a way too early handicapping of the 2020 presidential race. So we'll get into all that. We'll talk specifics in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
By the way, if you use that Amazon portal, nowhere anywhere? Does it show you that you're, that you're on the Nicole Sandler Show Amazon portal? There, in the address bar, there'll be a little thing that'll say "Raid or not," because I signed up for it when I was using the show name "Radio or Not." But don't worry about it. If you use that Amazon portal that's on NicoleSandler.com, you'll get there, and we'll get a small commission. Okay, ready to talk 2020? Let's get to it, shall we?
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Lonnie Anderson?
No, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
What is it? I gotta know. I can't take it
anymore. All right, I'll tell you. Calm down. His real name is Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it, Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
And now here's Thomas Neuberger on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Thomas Neuberger.
Even I'm disappointed.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Beautiful. Yes. I like Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah, that was good. I heard a little chuckle from you.
Yep.
So here we are. It is, what is today? It's March 20th, 2019. A year from now, we'll be at really the beginning of primary season. But 2020 is off and running. I saw today that Mike Gravel, remember Mike Gravel? He has formed an exploratory committee to run again.
That's really interesting. You know, Mike Gravel has an interesting history.
I'm
going to it here, but he's actually a guy who's done some really important things. He's been around Congress for a long time.
Yeah, didn't he read like the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record or something like that?
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, he's fascinating. Yep. Fascinating. I want to try to get him on the show. I mean, I've tried to get presidential candidates. And I had Andrew Yang on, and I had Marianne Williamson on. I've tried to reach out to Pete Buttigieg. Can't get through to anybody. And I haven't tried for the top tier candidates because, you know, I'm just a little, online radio show. But hopefully Bernie will be back on the show one of these days. I've been told he will. The rest of them. But Mike Gravel, I have a feeling I could probably get.
You know, you're what you're saying is you're the Thomas Neuberger of radio hosts.
There you go.
Good luck with that, by the way. I think getting Gravel on would be fascinating.
Oh, so do I. You know, look, people poked fun at him because he's a little out of the ordinary, but so is life. I think he's a smart guy, and he just doesn't give a fuck. You know, he just says what he feels, and good for him.
You know, one of the he was reviled for a campaign ad. I think he was running in 2008, but I'm not sure of the year. Maybe it was 2004. One of those years when Democrats weren't the incumbent. And his campaign ad basically just showed him standing wistfully next to a pond throwing rocks into it.
Hmm.
And, that's kind of a
watching
Zen
the
statement.
Ripples, watching the ripples. Yes.
And I whoever showed that ad, I think it was Rachel Maddow back in the day, the early Rachel Maddow show, when she was pre-Russia.
Yeah.
kind of said, you know, this is kind of stupid. I mean, it was a bemused remark, but kind of stupid. And I'm thinking, no, that's actually kind of smart. I really like it. It made me want to know more about it. So
yeah,
there.
I hear you. Well, you know, Rachel, who prides herself on having all the candidates on her show, has conspicuously not had Bernie Sanders on, just saying. I'm sensitive to these things.
Well, people should not forget that she was one of the people who actively tanked Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that on a number of occasions. But one of the specific occasions was right near the end of the campaign, prior to the California voting. In fact, almost immediately prior to California voting, AP released a thing that basically said, we're taking Sanders out of the running because of the superdelegates.
Uh-huh.
And AP was widely reviled for that story. Even I wrote it up. And Maddow made it a feature on her show that night.
I was going to say unbelievable, but it's totally believable.
Believable.
Yep.
Even Chris Hayes has more sense than that, and more integrity.
Oh, definitely. There's no question. I used to watch Maddow all the time, and now Chris Hayes is the show I don't want to miss.
Well, every time I think he's about to stumble over something, he adds something that says, "Yeah, this is the right qualification."
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming back into the fold.
Yeah,
a little bit.
I like Chris Hayes. I've been impressed by him. I mean, it's not nobody's perfect. Even if I'm not perfect for me. I mean, I disagree with myself sometimes. So, I think he's the fairest among those hosts. Anyway, so Gaius Publius, Thomas Neuberger, you have a couple of pieces up and down with tyranny this week. Handicapping, as you say, a way too early handicapping of the 2020 presidential race. And the thing is, we're getting a lot of false information about some. There's a new CNN poll that they're touting today of how Bernie dropped 8 percentage points or something. What they don't tell you is if you look in the crosstabs, they didn't poll anyone under 50 years old.
Really? This race isn't Bernie's to lose. It's the Democratic Party's to lose.
Yeah.
And they're on their way. People can go to that article I wrote. The first of two is handicapping the race based upon the makeup of the voting pool, the makeup in terms of how many are still change candidates, how many are any Democrat, even the next Obama is just fine, and Trump and Trump only voters. And then the next slice through the voting pool is how many are independent, how many are Democrats and will vote Democratic regardless, and how many are Republicans and will vote Republicans regardless. And I kind of did a lot of cross-tabbing around that, and also looking at the right track, wrong track Republicans, just to get a view of how many of the Republican voters Trump can be expected to pick up if there's a change candidate in the offing. It turns out that you could probably, again, speculation, but you could probably count on an actual change candidate like Sanders picking up a lot of Trump voters who are not Trump and Trump only.
Right.
I mean, there are two groups of Trump voters. There are the MAGA hat wearing crazies, which is probably always been about 22 to 29% of the electorate. That's the number of people who thought George Bush walked on water when Bush was president. Turns out 61% of Republican voters think that the country's on the right track. That's not 100%.
No, and that's actually lower than I thought. But considering Trump's approval rating among Republicans is inordinately high, it's like in the 80 to 90% range, right?
Yes, and 29, but that's not looking at a specific and a non-Trump choice. So of the rest, let's call it 40%. It's actually 39.
Okay.
But of that 39%, 29%, 30% think the country's on the wrong track. 30% of Republican voters think the country's on the wrong track.
Okay.
10% are not sure. Well, not sure is pretty telling when you look at those Trump support votes. So let's say there's 20% of the Republican vote in play. 40% of the Republican vote in play. The Democratic candidate, whoever it is, Sanders or whoever, is going to pick up the 30% of Democrats. If that person can pick up 30% of Republicans as well, or 40% of Republicans, and a large number of independents, a change candidate could actually – I could see a 55-45 split in the popular vote.
Wow.
Now, that's an election that can't be stolen by anybody.
Right. Because if enough people come out and vote.
Any football fan knows that if you're losing by 2 points or winning by 2 points, the refs can steal the game.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't steal the game if you're up by 20.
Right. Exactly. If people turn out in big enough numbers, then they can't steal it.
turn out for a given choice.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
In other words, if the margin of victory or the margin of how far you're ahead is sufficiently large, even the Russians working with the Brazilians, I guess, is in the news these days. Huh. Couldn't pull that one off.
Right. Okay.
Nor could the Israelis, by the way, who are also have a hand in this, and nobody's actually looking at that. But at any rate, but on the other hand, if you go to a race where you've got a faux change or a no change, Biden being a no change and somebody like Kamala Harris being a faux change candidate. Those independents who would turn out in droves for Bernie are not going to turn out.
Right. Those
Republicans, they're going to revert to the Republican Party, those wrong track Republicans.
Right. I mean, the way I look at it is I think there's two. There's Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I've got my Bernie and Liz action figures right here with me in the studio. They hang with me, and everybody else. I mean, they're all running on. You know, I watched the Kirsten Gillibrand town hall the other night. I believe she's got no chance in hell of winning. But my God, it's so interesting to hear the former blue dog from upstate New York when she was in the House, who now fancies herself a progressive, talk about Medicare for all and $15 an hour minimum wage and a Green New Deal and stuff like that. When, you know, Bernie Sanders was the only one saying these things 4 years ago. Well, not the Green New Deal part, that's new, but talking about climate change as one of the most pressing national security issues that we're dealing with today. He's been saying that for a long time.
As the most pressing.
As the most
not
pressing.
Not one of the most
exactly.
pressing. He was asked during the debates, what is the greatest challenge to American security? He said climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unequivocally true.
Yes. And so I think, you know, the change candidates you're talking about, Tom, are Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. Either one of those, I think, would bring the progressive masses out to vote for them. I think if you go for the other group, as you were talking about, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, or any of the others, that's the faux change or the no change. And I think it's not gonna make people turn out.
Yes, exactly right. So it's going to be a squeaker race again. So the next post I did along those lines, I started looking at Alan Lichtman's 13 keys to the White House.
Now, who is Alan Lichtman?
Alan Lichtman is a he's an academic, and he developed a modeling procedure for looking at presidential elections based upon some statistical work that was done in modeling earthquakes. And this is now statistics. So the rule on this one says if you can find indicators that correctly predict past earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
and all you're looking for is statistical significance, then you can use those criteria to correctly model or predict future earthquakes. This is, you know, anybody who invests in the stock market knows about developing a system for winning in the stock market and then using that system in the past to see if it would have won you in the 2014, 2015, 2016, whatever it is. You sort of look backwards at things. He developed this, I believe, in the 80s or 90s. It might have been the 90s. And he looked at every presidential race since 1860, which is the first time a Democrat faced a Republican. And he refined it down to originally 12 and then 13 keys that are basically yes-no propositions. And it turns out that if the – 13.
Mm-hmm.
If the party in power gets a yes answer on 8 or more of the 13, then they will win the popular vote. And that has been true for every popular vote, including 2016.
Wow.
Since 1860. And these aren't based upon a theory of how do you predict presidential races. It's just based on let's see what the data tells us about what matters.
Okay.
It turns out 12 of the 13 keys are statements about the party in power, and the 13th is a statement about the challenger.
Okay.
So just to give you some samples, by the way, this is up at Down with Tyranny.
I'll put links to both these posts on my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. So I'll post them.
Thanks, yep. Michelle. A way too early look at Alan Lichtman's 13 keys. The keys includes things like, I'll just give you a sample.
Okay.
Key one, party mandate. After the midterm election, the incumbent party holds more seats in the House than after the previous midterm. Yep. Now, in 2016, that key was yes for the incumbent, right?
No, because in 2018. The Democrats took control of the House. Right?
In 2018, yes.
Yeah, you need that to fix that post.
No, 2016, that was a yes for the incumbent presidential candidate, for the incumbent party, because in 2014, right, they had gained in the House.
Right. Oh, okay. For 2016, but for 2020 in the midterm election, 2018, the Democrats retook the House. So that's false for 2020.
Yes. So that key turns false for the Republican. The second one, there's no contest for the third part for the no serious contest for the incumbent party nomination. In 2016, mm-hmm. that was true for the incumbent, which is the Democrat.
Right.
The incumbent party in 2018 gotcha. So far. In 2020, that'll be true for the there's no serious challenge within the party for Trump.
Right.
Let's assume that that's true for now. Third one, incumbency. The incumbent party candidate is the sitting president. So these are statements about the incumbent party.
Right.
The long-term economy is good. The short-term economy is good. There's been an important military success. No important military failure. All of these things are statements about the incumbent party. The 13th key is a statement about the challenger. The challenging party is not a charismatic or national hero, but everything else is about the incumbent.
Right.
So that leads you philosophically to believe that the key to the White House is for the incumbent party not to screw up. And I think in a common sense way, that's probably what most people think is true, that the incumbent party has to screw up in order to lose the White House. And this is a way to characterize what a screw up looks like. It turns out that if the incumbent party has only 8 keys for it, then it could possibly lose the Electoral College. So when Lichtman looked at all of the elections where the Republican Party had the 8 keys it needed to win the popular vote, mm-hmm. but only those 8,
right.
The electoral vote was mixed. When it got 9 or more keys, the electoral vote college vote went with the popular vote.
Wow.
So it's pretty rock solid. And there's some interest. I may write up in a future post what the statistical basis of this is. It's rather interesting.
So
the analysis of what's going on in 2020, just to close this out, I'm sorry, Nicole.
No, that's okay.
The Republicans hold 8 keys right now.
Mm-hmm. From this list. Okay. So it's saying it could go either way, really.
It's saying that they will win the popular vote, and they may or may not win the electoral vote.
Right. Well, for 13, what you have here, challenger charisma. The challenging party candidate is not charismatic or a national hero. If that's the case, if it's a false, it's false if Sanders is the nominee by the same criteria as 12. Bernie Sanders is a charismatic. He's got that something that draws people in. He's still pulling in the crowds. As you put, Elizabeth Warren has not recaptured the star power she once had, at least not so far. That's true.
That's the ninth key.
Right.
That's the ninth key. In other words, the Republicans will win on the they are -5 on keys 1 through 12, all statements about the Republican candidate. on key 13, if the Democrats nominate a non-charismatic, uninteresting, run-of-the-mill candidate, then that turns the last key negative, against them.
Right. And it's still too early to tell about some of them. I mean, the media is doing everything they can to build Beto O'Rourke into, the next Bernie Sanders. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. By his fundraising, I guess it's showing that he had a good first day. But we don't know if that's going to last. We don't know if people are going to go, but the emperor has no clothes. Where are his policy ideas? I mean, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are putting them out there, and I've heard nothing from him.
Yeah, this is going to be bad. Buried in this post is the assumption that the Democrats would rather lose. I've said this in 2016 as well. The Democrats would rather lose to Trump than lose to Sanders. And in fact, there was a rather infamous clip of is it Donnie Deutsch?
Yes.
A big Democratic fundraiser.
Yep. A regular on Morning Jerk.
Do you want to tell that story?
Sure. Who is only there. He's a wealthy man because he inherited his father's company and he sold it. And he's now, richer than he's one of them. And so he has a voice on MSNBC. So they were talking about, AOC and Bernie and democratic socialism. And he said, I'd vote for Trump before I'd vote for a socialist. Is that what you were going to say?
You got it. And what happened immediately after?
I don't know what happened immediately after. I didn't see it. I just heard about it.
Oh, immediately after, Morning Joe said, wait a minute, Pilgrim.
Really?
You're off the reservation. Well, I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
But he jumped in immediately and basically said in coded language, these are words you cannot say on television.
Huh. Really?
That a Democrat would rather elect Trump.
Huh.
We don't want this to become a thing.
Wow. Well, I'm surprised.
Now,
he said it was interrupted,
and he was in a tone of voice warned not to continue that thought.
Wow. Well, good, because I'm sorry, that's treasonous.
It's treasonous. It's treasonous to you, but he speaks for his class.
Yeah, I guess so.
He speaks for the ruling class of the Democratic Party.
Yep. No, you're right. But a few minutes ago you were talking about unless the Republicans really screw up, Donald Trump is a massive screw up. Nothing about him should be president. Everything he's done is putting this country on a dangerous turn. It's embarrassing on the world stage that this idiot, this mental midget, this fucking moron is the president of the United States. And he's unraveling, not that he was ever raveled to begin with, but he's coming apart at the seams in public view on Twitter every day. I mean, oh my God, I don't understand. I've heard people say, I met somebody just the other day who is a conservative, and she's like, well, there are some things I don't like about him, but I think he's doing a good job. How could anybody think he's doing a good job?
Well, nobody can. And that's where you get into these 30% or 40% of Republicans who think the country's on the wrong track,
right,
but don't like Democrats. But they do like Sanders because this is the feature, not the bug. He's not a Democrat.
Right. Right.
People get that's the feature. That's what brings those crowds out. I mean, I'm involved in an awful lot of and have been for years involved in a lot of sort of left-wing Democrat and other independent discussion groups. And there's a kind of thing going on today that there's a little bit of social pressure not to be too critical of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Yes, there is.
And that doesn't change the fact that the independent voters, who are 42% of the country, don't align with Democrats for a reason, even though they align with Sanders. The Democratic Party has not covered itself in glory. It has covered itself in the obvious. And nobody who supports the Democratic Party wants to say that. Also, people who generally don't support the Democratic Party are sufficiently terrified of Trump that they don't want you to say the obvious, that the Democratic Party is not exactly the white knight savior that you want them to be.
Right. Well, we've seen that. I mean, look, this is the problem, and it goes back to 2016. Well, it goes back longer than 2016, but 2016 put it all into perspective, watching what the Democratic Party did to Bernie Sanders. And they're still at it. You look at the establishment of the party. You look at the Neera Tandons and the David Brocks, the Cher Blue. This is the establishment wing of the Democratic Party, who is so anti-Bernie. I mean, now they have, look, I understand that David Sirota is a polarizing figure. A lot of people have been, are critical of him. Because, I like David Sirota personally, and I think he's a good journalist, but he can be a bit of a dick. And I'm not saying anything that he wouldn't agree with. I think he knows he is a divisive figure. That said, I think he'll be a good speechwriter for Bernie, although I like the speechwriter he had last time in RJ Esco, just saying. They're making a big deal out of the fact that David Sirota is now working for Bernie Sanders and using it as a smear. The smears yes. are just everywhere, and it's really getting old. And they smear him in the same breath as they say, you know, don't badmouth other Democrats.
And they're smearing him with lies.
Yes.
The lie against David Sirota is that he was working for Sanders while he was writing for the Guardian.
Right.
And of course, that's not true, because two people have come forward, one of whom works for the Guardian, said, no, the dates are wrong. You've got the dates wrong. And yet the Atlantic, of all places,
yeah.
published the smear, and they haven't taken it down yet, even though it's been refuted.
Yep.
No, it's not just Norman Solomon wrote an interesting piece a couple of weeks ago that Sanders' greatest threat is from the press. That's true so far. I still think party manipulation, like those three coin tosses in Iowa that gave three
I remember
Hillary Clinton got 3 out of 3
to
get the in a tied caucus, tied caucus races, tied caucus contest. She got 3 out of 3 coin flips to go her way.
Right.
And all of the voter deregistration that went on in, I believe it was Arizona. Those things will happen again. And you know, if they do, they're going to drive down the Democratic vote.
Yeah, they are.
And I think, frankly, if I were a Democratic person who was inside that corrupt money machine that is the Democratic Party ecosystem, I'd be scared, you know what, of Sanders winning, because he wants to take away my income and he wants to take away that infrastructure. And frankly, if you're second in Rome and you have all the money flowing in the world to you that you need, why have your party be the winner in Rome and you be exiled to Naples? Right?
Right. I hear you. And that's why, you know, there was the big Dem exit. And now there's a whole, you know, vote blue no matter who. And people are going, wait, hold on. It's primary season. I'm going to advocate for who I think will be the best president, the one to put us on the right direction. You know what? Let's not talk about what's going to happen in November of 2020 yet, because we're still in primary season. And this is when we get to fall in love. This is when we get to shoot for the moon, for the stars, for the best possible person to represent us. Look, I'll vote for my dog Jackson over Donald Trump. Jackson would be a better president. Thankfully, Jackson's not on the ballot because I couldn't handle the pressure. But, you know, there is no choice. But that said, the DNC is already starting this shit. And by the DNC, I'm talking about those establishment figures, the Neera Tandons, the Cher Blue, the Zerlina Maxwells, who's, you know, every time they do a thing on Bernie, they have to have on a Bernie hater, most notably in Zerlina Maxwell. It gets old.
So can I make a comment before we close about David Sirota?
Yes.
Thank you. I've been saying this privately for a couple of weeks. I'll say it publicly here.
Okay.
the Bernie Sanders 2016 campaign lacked a killer instinct. Mm. They don't know how to take up an opponent who's down and make the give them the final cut. He let Clinton off the hook too much. I think Sirota has a killer instinct.
Huh, okay.
And I would love to see that campaign have a killer instinct. The criticism from the left of the Sanders campaign is that he was a little too nice to Hillary.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not saying he needs to be mean, but mean and sharp are two different things.
Okay.
And I'm a little nervous that he's a little too collegial.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's that risk under with Sirota on the board.
No, you're probably right. All right, with that, we're just out of time. I'm going to put these two articles that we talked about on the blog at NicoleSandler.com, and Tom Neuberger. We'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Nicole.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. And I will see you tomorrow. It's Thursday, Howie Klein Day. See you then. Stay involved.